swing and a high fly ball. Deep left field. Parra back at the track, at the wall. Gone! Paul Goldschmidt goes yard, deep to left field, in the bottom of the first, and the Diamondbacks jump on John Gray. It's 3-0 Arizona. The pitch. Fly ball well hit, left center field, back towards the wall, it is to the bottom of the wall! Lamb scores, Descalso scores, Bradley to third, a 2-run triple for Archie Bradley! Do you believe it?
I like to view myself as an athlete, as a guy who can still do some stuff at the plate. They've let me take BP and get some at-bats all year long. I knew the situation. I was honestly, you know, I was thinking getting a hit. Like, why not? You know, they're not really expecting me to swing the bat that well. So I scoot up on the dish, kind of grinded my knuckles, and was like, let's go, man. Bring it in here.
I don't think I've ever once cared, because it doesn't affect how the game's played. There's a difference. You know, we had a pretty special regular season. Now it's time to move on to the postseason, and everybody's even. What's going to matter is who plays the best. Just has done a pretty good job of assimilating. Please use that word. Like, you know, in the clubhouse. I just think it's a guy that's more mature, as you see a lot of 20, you know, something guys as they get more comfortable on the field, off the field.
You're more comfortable with stuff like this, like media the day before, media in the clubhouse, the breaks between innings for TV, the different start times, just the whole atmosphere, the adrenaline rush, the stakes, stuff like that. I think it's just a comfortability factor that you're not surprised by anything that comes up.
I think we're healthier. I think we have played better in the month of September. We were part of that 22 games. We were in the early part of that. And they've really been on a roll the last 50, 60 games. I mean, playing as well as anyone. But I like the guys in the room, and I like that fight. And we saw it on Tuesday night. And obviously, we're going to have to play our best. We know that. But that's the way the playoffs should be.
I've thrown against them a couple of times this year. In the past, I've thrown against them. And they have a really balanced lineup top to bottom. And you know, come out and make pitches, and you see what happens. And I feel like right now, we are playing as good as, you know, we've played, at least since I've been here. We feel really good about ourselves, and we're ready for any type of challenge that anyone can bring to us. And if we can, you know, stay within ourselves and do what we do really well, we feel like we can play with anyone.
To have the opportunity to once again be in the playoffs, I could say I don't take it for granted anymore. It seemed easy for a while with the Tigers organization, especially going my first year to the World Series. I appreciate every step of the way now, even more, I think.
The difference between this one and 2015 was now we know how it feels to be there in a playoff game. You know, most of the guys inside the clubhouse in 2015, they were the first playoff. Now, we have an idea what is going on out there in a playoff game.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hope you're having an outstanding Thursday. I am having a phenomenal Thursday, and if you want to know why, I'll tell you why. Because finally, tonight, for the very first time in the month of October, we have actual playoff baseball.
Can you dig it?
I absolutely dig playoff baseball. And while this may not be evident to a lot of people, unlike what some people think, there has not yet been playoff baseball, because last night was a play-in game for the National League. On Tuesday night, we had a play-in game for the American League. And now the teams have played their way in. It is a matter of playing off in a series the way baseball has always been intended to be played. So that is where we start this afternoon on the Extravaganza. Coming up, we have a lot of other good information to discuss with you and to hash through with you, including your boy Cam Newton. How about your boy Kush? Cam, I'm surprised that this didn't find its way into the montage, to be 100% honest with you. This is maybe the biggest story in the NFL today. Because Cam Newton not only insulted a female sportscaster or reporter, not only did he insult her with a sexist comment, there is fallout already. He is losing sponsors. The NFL is probably going to sanction him in some way for this. Maybe the Carolina Panthers will. But just 4 days after his best game since his MVP season of 2015, and that is his win 4 days ago over Tom Brady and the Patriots on national television, Cam Newton finds a way to just kind of, I don't know, throw away all of that goodwill. He makes a sexist comment toward a female reporter, then laughs about it. And according to the female reporter, Jordan Rodrigue, he had a chance to make things right later. After the press conference, she sought him out to talk to him for a moment about what he said. He refused to apologize. What is going on in the mind of one of the NFL's brightest superstars, one of the NFL's most marketable players, one of the NFL's great quarterbacks when he's right, like he was in his only MVP season? What is going through the mind of Cam Newton?
A lot of pride in seeing your receivers play well. Devin Funchess has seemed to really embrace the physicality of his routes and getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of an enjoyment to see him kind of truck-sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. Like, it's funny. But fun is coming along, man. This is a big game for him because of, you know, him being from Detroit. And, you know, I know he wants this win extremely bad. And just to see his growth over the years, he's a completely different player. We're not just on the field. And, you know, I told him and Benji.
You know, the rest of what he said is honestly a little bit irrelevant. I'm going to stop it there because you heard what you needed here. What you didn't hear is what you can't hear because it's a visual thing, and that's the smiling face of Cam Newton and pulling his head back like, a woman asking me about a player's routes. That's the look. If I could put voice to face, if I could find a way to verbally describe a man's look on his face, it would be something like, it's just one of the most demeaning, sarcastic laughs ever. Because that's what it is. It's a big smile and just kind of a pulling back of his head a little bit like, girl, what you know about routes? That's how it came out. What do you know about routes? You are a woman. The question, if you did not hear all of it, because as is the kind of norm when it comes to these press conferences, the reporter's often off mic. So you can't hear her as clearly as you can hear Cam Newton, obviously. But her question was about the physicality of Cam Newton's receivers running routes, particularly that of Devin Funchess, running his routes and being willing to go through people, you know, for whatever that's worth as far as physicality. So it was certainly a decent question. But it's not the question that is getting the news. It is the response from Cam Newton.
Getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of an enjoyment to see him?
Right now, even at this particular point, he's got this grin on his face. And I mean a looking down at the podium grin that kind of just says, are you serious right now? This is cute. How cute. You got a woman here trying to ask me like she knows something about running routes. That's what his face says. And now he stands up fully expecting the end of the question and getting ready to answer it.
Truck-sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. Like,
I cannot find a better way to explain his look than just like, girl, what do you know about routes? You are female, right? You don't know physicality. You don't know routes, girl. And he's like just, there's, I don't know, two, three seconds here of uncomfortable, awkward silence after he says routes because he's just got this big smile and his head pulled back as if to say, you really asked me that question?
It's funny. But fun is coming along, man.
And then he gets into it with fun, meaning Devin Funchess. So, yeah, that happened yesterday, and now Cam Newton is paying the price. Social media killing him. Social media absolutely killing him. Female sports journalists and broadcasters killing him. Male sportscasters killing him. Headline on ESPNW, which is a women's version of ESPN or a site, part of the site that is specifically dedicated to women's sports. Yes, women understand football. The game isn't exactly rocket science, writes ESPNW's Darcy Main. The question is, first of all, what is Cam Newton thinking, as he is indeed, as I mentioned, one of the most marketable players in the National Football League, or at least has been? What is he thinking by just publicly? I mean, let me tell you this. and I'm probably not telling you anything you don't know, but I'll say it anyway. There is a significant percentage of NFL players who probably feel sometimes like Cam Newton did yesterday, that women don't play football, don't act like you know. There is no women's high school football. There is no women's college football. There is no women's pro football. Sorry, lingerie league. Don't act like you know. If you want to ask me a generic question about how I'm feeling, fine, but don't try to talk to me about things that you can't possibly know because you know nothing about football. I promise you that is a very, very male dominant feeling and thought and insight inside the minds of a lot of NFL players. I guarantee you. Because I've been in enough locker rooms. I've been in enough locker rooms on the college level and on the professional level where I can tell you that is a mentality that exists. But none of them have had, least of all Cam Newton, have had the I don't know, do I just want to use stupidity? The unawareness, the lack of self-awareness, the lack of recognition of what year it is, to say it out loud. I promise you, he's not the only one who feels that way, but he is the only one who was dumb enough or crazy enough or whatever enough to say it out loud. It just doesn't make any sense. And like I said, the fallout has begun. Dannon, you know, the yogurt people, maker of Oikos yogurt brand, which has been using Cam Newton as an endorser, has pulled it, said they will no longer work with Cam Newton. They were shocked and disheartened by the behavior and the comments of Cam Newton towards Charlotte Observer reporter Jordan Rodrigue, which we perceive as sexist and disparaging to all women.
We're hearing that Cam Newton was dropped by one of his sponsors. We're working on the news right now. I'll start with you first, Coach. Talk to me a little bit about Cam Newton, his comments, and now we're hearing that Dannon Yogurt, the Greek yogurt company he was dealing with, product, has dropped him. Your thoughts?
Well, he was out of line with his comments, and he was disrespectful. And I think this is a message now being sent by a sponsor, by a brand that he has represented, that are saying that, you know what, this is not becoming of our brand. You represent our brand. And I think going forward, if you're a player, a coach, anyone that is a sports celebrity, and you represent a brand, this is the first time now we've heard of something like this. And this happened very quickly. So now all of a sudden, if you're a player, and I've said this before, hey, not only do you represent your organization, you represent somebody's brand. You want to build your brand, you have to represent that brand with your words and your actions. And now all of a sudden, Dannon has said, you know what, we're going to drop this guy. That, to me, sends a message, a big, strong message to guys that represent companies as well as their organization, and more important, their last name.
Now here's the question. Here's a bigger question about this. And, Coach, you can feel free to answer it if you like when you hear it. And it's not PC, the question. But I guess it doesn't have to be because it's a question. It's not a statement. But doesn't that stereotype still exist in America today, that women in general, don't understand football? And I can tell you, I mean, literally as recently as what, 2-3 years ago? I can tell you that the Cleveland Browns had something, Jim. And I don't know if the Lions have ever done anything like this or any other teams have ever done anything like this. But the Cleveland Browns had something called Football 101. And they would have it like in the training camp type part of the season in the summer. Or maybe it was before training camp in the dead of summer. I don't recall specifically. But I remember, you know, reading about it and actually doing some promos for it. It was called Football 101. And it was teaching women the game of football. Wives and daughters, girlfriends, want to learn the game so that you can have an enjoyable experience watching Cleveland Browns football with your, you know, with your male companion? Come on out here and we'll show you. We'll give you the basics. We'll tell you what a first down is. We'll tell you why it takes 10 yards. We'll tell you what the linebacker does and all this. It was just football 101. Jim, this is 3-4 years ago. They might even still do it. I don't know because I'm not so closely associated with the Browns anymore. They might even still have football 101. So as bad and as tone deaf and as, you know, fundamentally unaware of the situation that Cam Newton appeared to be in this, losing sponsors now and everything else, clearly it was a dumb thing to say because Jordan Rodrigue is a beat writer for the Charlotte Observer. She's not your typical girlfriend who doesn't watch football, who needs to go to Football 101. She's an actual beat reporter. She's been around the game. She knows the game and, as such, is just as qualified as any guy to ask a question about routes. I keep saying that the way he said her out.
I can't help myself either.
I know,
all day,
right?
Today.
It's kind of funny. It's like, you know, it's just funny to hear you asking about routes. Anyway, there is a perception still, and the NFL even knows it because some of their teams hold football 101 like camps, if you will, film sessions to show women what the game of football is all about. So if that is the case, is it that out of line for Cam Newton to kind of verbalize it?
I mean, it's still a little out of line for him to verbalize it, but does the stereotype seem to still exist? I would have said yes before you laid out those anecdotal pieces of evidence.
And not even just the stereotype existing, it exists for a reason. Because most women don't watch football.
Especially
most
back
women
in the day,
don't
certainly
understand
didn't,
football.
Yeah.
No, not just bad. I mean, look, I've got a 14-year-old son. He's a freshman, right?
Right.
He's playing high school football. Playing JV team football.
Okay.
And he's been playing tackle football since third grade. He has been playing flag football since age 5 in kindergarten. So he's been playing football for 9 years. My wife has gone to every one of those games. She doesn't understand a damn thing. And I'm not making fun of her, although I guess I'm making fun of her, but not in a cruel sort of way because she'll laugh at herself. She'll sit next to me during the games and she'll say to me, "Which one's the linebacker again?" And then we were 3 games into this fall's season, Jim, and she was at work talking to one of her, actually it was a group of her coworkers because she was at lunch.
Okay.
And she called me and she said, what position does Jared play on offense again? It's safety on defense, but what about offense? And I had to recall, or actually it was a text she sent, and I had to text back to her, "You've been watching him for three games now. This season, he plays linebacker, not safety, and he's a tight end on offense." Okay. She thought linebacker was safety. She had no clue, and she's been watching all the games. When my daughter goes to the games with her, the two of them just sit there and crack each other up with how much they don't know. Which one is this? Which one is that? What does he do? Jim, she's been watching the games with me of my son since age 5 for 9 years now. So the stereotype exists for a reason. Women, generally speaking, obviously not all, and what made Cam Newton's crime, and I'll use that word in air quotes on the radio, so egregious, is that Jordan Rodrigue does not fit into the category of my wife.
Right.
She does not fit into the category of my daughter and of so many other women who might go to the football 101, you know, film camp.
Right. I mean, if they have the media,
she's a beat writer.
Exactly. If they're the beat writer, have the media passenger standing in front of you.
Yeah.
That's probably not the person you should be saying it to, because odds are they actually know a little bit. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in that room asking you questions right now.
And she tweeted, by the way, she tweeted about it right afterwards with a great response. She said, "I don't find it funny," because he said, "I think it's funny that a woman's asking me about routes." And she said, "I don't think it's funny. I think it's my job." And it is her job. And they don't just give those jobs away because somebody might be a pretty face or because of, you know, affirmative action by way of sex or gender. They didn't just give her the job because we have to have a certain number of females on. I mean, they gave her the job because she applied for the job and because she knew the game and she has worked her way into becoming a beat writer.
Exactly.
So anyway, we got some people on hold about this. Let's get to a few phone calls before we do Wild Stats and some other things. Terry in Toledo, you are on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. What'd you make of Cam's remarks, Terry?
Well, I think, you know, everyone who listens to me is going to say I'm coming off as a sexist pig, but
uh-oh.
I'll say this. I don't agree that what he said was probably that smart. But with that being said, if you secretly polled all the NFL players, the great majority of them would laugh at that and say, you know what? He only said publicly what I've been thinking privately for years. So while I don't agree with what he said is smart and it wasn't politically correct, the media is making such a big deal out of it. He said something insensitive. The bottom line is it goes both ways. Men try to infiltrate typically women-dominated fields, and women don't like it either. So the bottom line is if you're a woman in this field, you know what? You're getting paid. You got to tough it up. He said it. It's over. That's life, man. That's life. Nobody died. Nobody got killed. We got people dying for things, you know, that are more important than this. So I don't agree with what he said, but I think it's way overboard. He's just saying what the majority of NFL players are thinking. So
well,
I think
I
it's just being
you're right about that. Like I said, and thank you for the call, Terry. I have been in a lot of locker rooms. I've heard a lot of players talk about this kind of thing, and you're right. This is what the majority of them think. He just had the again, you know, the lack of self-awareness or lack of self-control to say it out loud. Nobody says that. Jimmy in Toledo next. Hey, Jimmy, go ahead.
Jimmy, yeah, I think it's funny because, you know, the outrage is coming from the so-called tolerant crowd. And, you know, whether you agree with Cam or not, we can all acknowledge it's probably the predominant thought in the locker rooms. And there's a newsflash, folks. Men and women are different physiologically, psychologically. You know, physically, there are differences. And I disagree with you. I think, you know, it probably would have been funny if you're standing there listening to that verbiage, physicality and stuff. And she's probably like 5'2", you know. And, I disagree with you. She's probably, I don't know how many beat reporters there are, but I'm guessing that she's probably qualified in the fact that she knows sports, the extent she's a beat writer. Mm-hmm. But you can't tell me that she's any more qualified. This has definitely been a push to get women in the sport, into locker rooms and into the sports journalism industry, and put them in places where, because I remember when it all went down to begin with, a lot of men, and rightfully so in my opinion, didn't want women in their locker rooms. I still don't think really why that was ever necessary to begin with. I mean, I don't think men would be allowed in women's locker rooms.
We're in two different conversations here now, because I agree with the second part of what you're saying. And that is about...
But that's where this started.
Jimmy, hold on, bud. Let me get a word in edgewise here, okay? When we're talking about women going into men's locker rooms at periods of time when they are naked or are in towels and then changing into their clothes... and they are allowed to have access to the locker room like male reporters do. That is a very, very, still to me, a very, very hypocritical thing, because you will never see a male reporter allowed to go into a locker room while, Maria Sharapova is still changing and in a towel.
Absolutely.
You know, so you're right about that. But this isn't access to locker room now, because this was not a locker room setting. This was the media podium, media room, and the podium that was set up, and she's just there like every other.
I understand that, but it goes directly to how women got into the beat business to begin with, because as you know, beat writers have to be in the locker rooms as well to be able to accurately perform their jobs. So one thing led to another, and that's how this whole thing started, and I absolutely do believe that the diversity push is a part of this.
Okay, it may be, but here's the thing, and Jimmy, thanks for the call. Here's the thing. She got the job, and it's not Cam Newton's responsibility at the time that this is going on to determine her qualifications for that job. You know what I mean? You might say, well, diversity got her a little extra edge in the hiring when she applied for the job. Maybe, maybe not, but it's not Cam Newton's responsibility to figure that out and to say what he said. That's what the problem here is. Brian in Fostoria. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Brian, what's shaking?
Hey, Bob. I have a couple thoughts about this. And while it might not ever come out, the NFL needs to take full responsibility for this. This is a simple case of give someone an inch, they take a mile. I mean, you don't stop players from showing protest during an anthem. You let them raise their fist in unity. Cam Newton raises his fist and flat out says it's for black power. So in his mind, what's he not allowed to do? At what point are you going to take a stance?
That's a very, very interesting perspective. And thank you for the call, Brian. I want to kick that around a little bit, maybe on the other side of the bottom of the Hour Sports Center here. That's a very interesting perspective. Brian's essentially saying the NFL players have been told they can do what they want, say what they want, argue on behalf of whatever social issue they want. Why can't he stand there and argue that? Why are women trying to cover football, a game that they can't even play? You've given them all of that room, and now you want to take it back? You can't do that. That's a very interesting perspective, Brian, and we will talk more about that on the other side. Before we get to our bottom of the hour Sports Center, what do you say we get wild?
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Last night, National League Wild Card play-in game, Diamondbacks hit four, count them, one, two, three, four triples, including the unlikeliest one of all from relief pitcher Archie Bradley. The four triples are the most in a single playoff game since the Boston Americans, now known as your Red Sox, hit five of them in both games 5 and 7 of the 1903 World Series. Yeah, 114 years ago. That's a pretty nice record to establish. So that is your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. We'll get more phone calls on Cam Newton, and we'll talk a little bit of baseball coming up as well. FYI, down the road at 4:05 or so, we'll talk to Paul Keels about the Buckeyes. And also, we're going to talk to Bill Clark a day early about high school football this weekend. That'll be coming up in the 4 o'clock hour as well, right here on the Extravaganza.
662-401-065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, rolling on as we continue, where do you watch your football? I can tell you, if you're not watching it from your own couch or easy chair, the best place to watch it is at B-Dubs, Buffalo Wild Wings. And you know what? This season, they've gone above and beyond to make it your football heaven. That's right. Countless taps and, of course, HD screens, but the entire place is committed to creating the perfect atmosphere for watching football, including food and drinks. The classic menu item called up to the roster, 35th Weck Sandwich. You got to try that. And also, limited time only, the Blue Moon Barbecue Sauce is to die for. There's more, but you got to find out. Come on in to Buffalo Wild Wings and see for yourself. It's the place with the best football experience. Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. All right, Kush. I got to share with you what I found in about 1 second. Literally, it took me about, 3 seconds to type the words Browns football 101 for women into my Google search browser.
Okay.
Because I told you, I remember promoting this a couple of 3 years ago, shortly before I started right here on the Ticket with the Extravaganza. And I knew the Browns did this, and I wondered if anybody else did. So I Googled up Browns football 101 for women. Are you ready for the top search results?
Okay, go ahead.
Antonio Brown, Football 101, Women's Clinic. Antonio Brown sponsors and runs this thing, or it's run for him in his name, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Number two, Football 101, Marvin Lewis Community Fund. The 14th annual Football 101 will take place on Wednesday, October 11th at Paul Brown Stadium. 450 of women's best female Bengals fans support the community fund, blah, blah, blah. It's about women learning football.
Okay.
Number four on the list, Football 101 for women, Jacksonville Jaguars. Next, Football 101 teaches women the X's and O's, and this is from the Medina Gazette out northeast Ohio, so that's a Browns promo. Next one, Football 101 for women, and I'm looking to see which city this one is. Cannot seem to find which city that one is, but it's not relevant because I wanted to get to the other two. Oh, that one's the Titans. There it is. That's for the Tennessee Titans. So they host a Football 101 for women. There's the one for the Browns on the official ClevelandBrowns.com site, Football 101 Cleveland Browns. Next, Rob Gronkowski's Football 101 Women's Clinic, New England Patriots, September 28, 2015. This isn't 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Most of these are either current or 2 years ago, such as the Gronkowski one. So can the NFL really scold Cam Newton for suggesting that maybe women don't really know about routes the way that he did? Is it right for him to lose sponsors the way he did now?
Hey, I even got one more for you, Bob. During the break, I was taking some calls, and we got some more calls. Stay on the line. Hold on, guys. And one of them pointed out that the Lions did one of these kind of things last year, the Moms Football Safety and Kids Fundamental Football Clinic. They are doing it again this year. It's prior to the Lions-Browns game at Ford Field on November 12th.
So say that again. It's the Moms and Kids?
The title of this says Moms Football Safety and Kids Fundamentals Football Clinic, Sunday, November 12th, prior to Lions Browns at Ford Field in Detroit.
I might not put that
one
in the same category.
It's on the Lions website.
I might not put that in the same category, though, Kush.
Okay.
Here's why.
All right.
It's specifically to moms about safety and kids' fundamentals. I think that is probably more aimed. Now, I haven't talked to the Lions.
It's actually two separate ones. The title is actually, as I'm scrolling down a little bit more, the title implies one thing. It's kind of two. The Kids Fundamental Football Clinic, ages 6 to 14, position-specific, character development, blah, blah, blah. The Moms Football Safety Clinic focuses on equipment fitting, concussion awareness.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
That's why these are, I don't think it's in the same category.
Okay, I see what you're
saying.
That
isn't teaching women about football. This is trying to convince moms to let your kid play football because of all of the, you know, the drama and the concussion studies and CTE fears and all these other things that are driving kids away from football because moms won't let them play. I think the Lions are doing, God, I'm glad this came up. This is a different story, Jim, than what we're doing because I don't believe this is we'll teach you mom about football. No, it's we'll teach your mom how safe the game is and you know how to make sure that your kids stay safe while playing football.
No, and you're probably right. This is a little bit different one. I'm just saying there was guys that pointed this out and thank you, Carr, for pointing that out.
It does not apply here. It doesn't. But I'm glad it came up anyway because Kush, I'm going to ask you to contact them in that next week sometime. I'd like to talk to somebody who runs this program because it's something every NFL team should daggone well be doing. Every NFL team should be reaching out to moms and saying, moms, if you've got young boys and you're afraid to let them play football, come to our clinic. We will conduct a safety clinic to show you how we make sure and how your youth leagues make sure that your kids are safe playing our great game.
That's a good idea. I'll start sending some messages out today. Good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't apply here. But it'll be something we talk about later. There absolutely has to be. But anyway, to the point here, can the NFL really, you know, rip Cam Newton too much for suggesting that a woman might not know much about routes the way that he did, considering the fact that they themselves kind of spur on, if you will, the stereotype of women not knowing much about football. Here's football 101 for women. Come on in and we'll teach you how this goes.
A little bit of an enjoyment to see him kind of truck-sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. Like, it's funny.
That smile and that laughter is so condescending. It is. It's bad. I'm trying to make a point here and I'm trying to make a case for his feelings about it. Because he's not the only one who feels that way about women not knowing football. But I cannot defend the condescension of a beat writer. I cannot defend the laughing and the mocking tone that he talks to her in when he says that. I get that there are a lot of people who feel like it. And as I said, my wife and daughter are prime examples of it. They don't get football. It's just not something that's important to them. They don't spend enough time watching it. It's a much more complex game than baseball, where it's see ball, hit ball, run bases. They can follow that. Everybody, males, females, everybody can follow baseball, young and old, pretty doggone easily. Even basketball, put it in at this end, not at the other end, and stop them at the other end. Football's a little bit more complex because of all of the different positions, 22 men on the field at a time, way more than anybody else in any of the other sports at one time. All with different responsibilities, very, very different types of rule sets. It's harder. Let's just be blunt. It's harder to learn football. And unless you watch it a lot, male or female, it can be pretty doggone confusing. And it's just a natural. Jimmy in Toledo called and said this. Newsflash, men and women are different. That doesn't mean one is better than the other, but they're different. And men usually watch a hell of a lot more football than women do. Hence, Football 101. From the Tennessee Titans, women, come and learn the game. Football 101 from the Browns, from the Jaguars, from the Steelers, from the Patriots. It's all out there. Mike in Toledo is next. Hey, Mike, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead.
Yes, what I was going to say is, first thing is, Cam Newton better hope that someday he's going to get that one female referee and her crew. She may not like the fact of what he did.
I hope that would never happen because you know what that would do?
I probably wouldn't.
That would make them look bad. Yeah, if they tried to punish him for this, they would be the ones who look bad, and that wouldn't serve anybody's purpose.
But the other thing is, I used to follow some of the women's professional football teams that were here in Toledo. And I knew some of those players. And I tell you what, some of those players is almost as big as Dick Butkus.
That's a pretty big guy. That's a pretty big guy back in the day.
they would probably be able to put a hurt on some of these players that we have now.
No, they couldn't.
No, they maybe. Couldn't. If the weight training was the same.
Well, it isn't, because women are not the same. I mean, that's it. Listen, well, and I know the point you're trying to make, my friend. And, Mike, thank you for the call. I got to get some other people on the air. I know the point you're trying to make is, hey, well, if we train them the same, it doesn't matter. Women can train as hard as they want. They'll never be as strong as men who train equally as hard. This is why when you're looking, again, at world-class athletics, look at the Olympics every year, the men's times are all faster, the men's weight that they've lifted is higher, the height that they jump is higher, the length that they jump is longer. Men are physiologically different than women. This is just news. This is science. This is biology. This is not political. It's not sexism. Men and women are different. No women is going through. There's a reason why there has not been a woman in the National Football League. There's a reason there has not been a woman in a college football game other than kicking an extra point. That's just the fact of the matter. Men and women are built differently, so let's stop that right there. Now, does that mean women can't have the mental capacity to learn the game as well as a man? Absolutely not. Anybody who studies the game can become an expert at the game. You don't have to have played it. Howard Cosell once famously wrote a book. Do you remember this, Kush? You're a little bit younger than I am. Howard Cosell once wrote a book, and its title was, I Never Played the Game. And it was all about the fact that he comes off as such an expert on everything that he talked about because he's Howard Cosell, but he never played it. He had to study it. He had to mm-hmm. learn it. He never played it.
Right.
And so, you know, it's true. And guess what else? Jim Lampley has never boxed, but he's the HBO number one boxing expert because you can study it. You don't have to have played it. And so women can do it as well as men. And that's what made Cam Newton's crime, if you want to use that crazy word, so egregious, is you have a beat writer here that you assume did study the game, learned the game, got hired in this job, and asked a very, very fine question, talking about receivers getting open with a little more physicality and running through guys, trucking. I think she said something about trucking a safety or something like that in order to get free, about Devin Funchess. So it was a very good question from what I have no doubt is a good reporter, and he shouldn't have done that. But the underlying message that I think he's carrying is one that a lot of people have, and that is women don't know football. Come on, y'all. Women don't know football. Alan in Toledo is next. Hi, Alan. Thanks for waiting, man. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just kind of baffled about the whole NFL. I think they're all spoiled millionaires. I mean, they thought not standing for the national anthem, and that is not the platform in which to fight for your cause. Get a platform. Get a foundation. Put money towards it, and then go legally towards them people, not disrespect the national flag.
Totally agree. Every word. Absolutely. There is a time and a place to do it, and a more effective way to do it than the way most of them do it.
I agree. And then Cam Newton, by making his comments that I just heard, I mean, that is right down the same line. That ain't the platform. You want to fight seeing that she shouldn't be in that press conference, then do that aside, not call her out in the press conference.
Exactly. The right thing to do if he was a little more mature, and Cam Newton, I think, has proven to be a little bit immature, even though he's a 28-year-old grown man, in certain circumstances, like when they lost the Super Bowl 2 years ago and he stormed off like a big old baby. If he really had a problem with her being there and asking questions, Alan, thanks for the call, my friend. Keep listening, though. You know what you do? You answer her question, and then after the press conference is over, maybe you go to the media director for the Panthers and you say, who is that? And he'll get the answer and say, does she belong in there? Does she really know anything? Because it's kind of trippy to me. And then you do that privately, and you ask the right people that question. And when the media director says, yeah, she's been a beat writer for X number of years, she's fine, don't embarrass yourself with this, then we don't have this issue. But he is a little immature, and he does tend to kind of handle things incorrectly publicly, as we've seen. Speaking of Cam, here's Cam in Toledo. Probably not the one we're talking about. You're on the air, though, on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go right ahead.
How's it going, Bob?
Going well, sir.
You know, I have a pretty decent issue with Cam Newton saying what he did, because honestly, to me, he is one of the least professional quarterbacks that there is out there. Being the fact that, you know, look at his history with the Super Bowl, you know, wearing a towel over his head, throwing a temper tantrum, you know, when, looking at a guy like, even, sore subject, but a guy like Colin Kaepernick after the end of the Super Bowl, after he got beat, he was up there, answered questions,
yep.
You know, guy like Peyton Manning lost numerous Super Bowls, was still up there answering questions. You know, I could have done this better, I could have done that better. You know, to scoff at a, not even a woman, a journalist. You know, looking past that, a journalist whose job it is to ask these questions at those press conferences is completely and totally unprofessional. And it's a continuation of just unprofessional, you know, actions from a guy that should, you know, like you said, as a 28-year-old man, should know better by now.
He really should. And again, like I said, his biggest problem is saying it and at the time and place that he said it. Can he wonder to himself privately, what does this woman know about routes? She's never played the game because women don't play this game. Can he wonder that privately? Yeah. Can he even ask that privately? Yeah. Can you say
absolutely
that from the public podium? No. Because you disparaged her. You disrespected her.
And again,
not as a woman, by the way, but as a reporter. I'm sure she doesn't want to be thought of as a female beat writer. She's just one of the beat writers. And the fact that her gender was called out is probably the most offensive thing at all.
And to just completely, and like you said, publicly, just discredit everything she's ever worked for just because of the fact that, what does a woman asking about routes? I find that kind of funny. You know, really, like, so a shed of professionalism.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I completely agree with that. Cam, I got to run, buddy. Thanks for the call. Let me get to Daniel in Perrysburg before the top of the hour. Daniel, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Bob Kush. I appreciate you taking my call. Thanks, guys.
You got it.
Hey, so I was thinking about this, and you had mentioned a little bit earlier about the clinics and how they were having women's clinics. And, I mean, I guess when I started thinking about that, I thought, well, they are, and they want to probably pique the interest because I feel like, generally speaking, women are less inclined to be excited or interested in football. But when we're dealing on a case-by-case basis like this, as you mentioned earlier, women, you know, their ability to think through and think through the game of football is equivalent to men. They may have not experienced it all, but in my experience in sports, some of the best coaches and best sports minds are people that never even played the games. And I feel like you touched on that a little bit earlier. So I feel like for him to disparage her, like you said, publicly like that, it's black and white. It's just something you shouldn't do when you're specifically speaking of gender, when you're using her gender against her, because that doesn't prohibit her from being able to understand the game.
Right. You know, it just makes her one part of a very select minority of women from the standpoint of sheer numbers who watch it and learn it, because that's all it takes.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It isn't rocket science, but it is complicated to the point where if you watch it a lot, you can develop a very great understanding of it. But most women don't watch it a lot, which is
correct.
Why.
Correct.
And that's not a slam at them. It's just they have, you know, men and women have different tastes and things that they enjoy. And football is generally
been brought
a
up
thing. That's all. You know, that's all there is.
Right. To. They've been brought up differently. I mean, it takes a lot of time to undo. You know, I mean, boys growing up when I was young, boys play with G.I. Joes, girls play with Barbies, you know? Slowly but surely things change a little bit, but we shouldn't discount their ability to do that should they so choose. But let me ask you real quick before I let you go.
Yeah,
I was thinking about this. Hey, could you imagine if it was LeVar Ball that had said that?
Oh, my goodness. No. Well, yes, I can't imagine that because he was close to things like that anyway with his disparaging of Christine Leahy. So, yeah, he has gone down that road before. So, yeah, it would have been. But you know what? I'll be 100% honest with you. If you think about it, odds are it wouldn't have been as big of a story because we're used to blow-ups and insane things coming out of the mouth of LeVar Ball. This LeVar
Correct.
Ball is not a former MVP. LeVar Ball is not considered one of the most marketable personalities in the NFL. It's probably a bigger controversy coming from the mouth of Cam than it would have been from the often humorous and disrespectful LeVar Ball that everybody is used to.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll throw that out too.
Thanks, guys.
Hey,
I appreciate
it. Good call, Daniel. I appreciate it. Hey, I want to do something nice to end the top of the hour, the first hour, I should say, for you of this program. I want to set you up with our ticket sweet deal of the week. It's a $50 gift certificate to Pizza Papali's on Monroe Street. Just log on to 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to get the sweet deal $50 gift certificates, the $50 version for just $25. Or You can get it for no dollars right now. That's right. We'll give you a free $50 gift certificate to Pizza Papali's on Monroe Street if you are caller number 5 now at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065, and we'll set you up. Good luck.
I don't think I've ever once cared because it doesn't affect how the game's played. There's a difference. You know, we had a pretty special regular season. Now it's time to move on to the postseason, and everybody's even. What's going to matter is who plays the best. Just has done a pretty good job of assimilating, please use that word, like, you know, in the clubhouse. I just think it's a guy that's more mature, as you see a lot of 20, you know, something guys as they get more comfortable on the field, off the field.
You're more comfortable with stuff like this, like media the day before, media in the clubhouse, the breaks between innings for TV, the different start times, just the whole atmosphere, the adrenaline rush, the stakes, stuff like that. I think it's just a comfortability factor that you're not surprised by anything that comes up.
I think we're healthier. I think we have played better in the month of September. We were part of that 22 games. We were in the early part of that. And they've really been on a roll the last 50, 60 games. I mean, playing as well as anyone. But I like the guys in the room, and I like that fight, and we saw it on Tuesday night, and obviously we're going to have to play our best. We know that. But that's the way the playoffs should be.
I've thrown against them a couple of times this year. In the past, I've thrown against them, and they have a really balanced lineup top to bottom, and you know, come out and make pitches, and you see what happens. And I feel like right now we are playing as good as, you know, we've played, at least since I've been here. We feel really good about ourselves, and we're ready for any type of challenge that anyone can bring to us. And if we can, you know, stay within ourselves and do what we do really well, we feel like we can play with anyone.
To have the opportunity to once again be in the playoffs, I could say I don't take it for granted anymore. It seemed easy for a while with the Tigers organization, especially going my first year to the World Series. I appreciate every step of the way now, even more, I think.
The difference between this one and 2015 was now we know how it feels to be there in a playoff game. You know, most of the guys inside the clubhouse in 2015, they were the first playoff. Now, we have an idea what is going on out there in a playoff game.
We realize that that game against Texas was a high-scoring kind of shootout-type game, and the other ones have not. But we tend to think that they're a very good defense. We do take the aberration, as you called it, out a little bit, and not worry about, first of all, we don't really worry about stats. We just worry about personnel, how we're doing against the certain looks they give us. I thought very average early in the season. Just the unit was average. The energy was average. No, it was a little bit of a culture shock. This is closer to a high school program than a pro program. You know, we're in the development. We're in 17, 18-year-olds that need to be developed with energy. It started slow, but the last couple weeks were outstanding. And last week was outstanding. The whole unit on special teams and everything.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hour number two underway now. It's a little late at 4:13. We got to dive right into Ohio State football, no question about it, but not until I congratulate Brandon Pelto of Delta for winning the Sweet Deal of the Week. He's got an outstanding prize there and a reminder that coming up in less than 20 minutes, we are going to have two more chances for you to qualify, your last two chances to qualify on air for the Ticket's European Vacation. That's right, the European Vacation. That qualifier is coming up before 4:30. And without further ado, it's time to get into college football, as we like to do each and every Thursday at this time with our good friend Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes on the Buckeyes Radio Network and ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm good. That was just reminding me. I had my first ever European vacation this past summer, so it brought back some good memories.
Well, you're one up on me. I still haven't made it across the pond. So, but we're sending somebody there for free, so that's a great contest. Paul, it wasn't much of a contest, since we're using that word. We'll segue into last week before we talk about Maryland, which I think will be a much better game. But second year in a row, Buckeyes just kind of hung one on Rutgers. I think it was 56 last year and 58 this year, or vice versa.
Other way around.
Yeah,
other way around.
Last year, 56 last week. Okay, you kind of lose track of the points when you're putting a buck 14 on somebody in two consecutive years. What did the Buckeyes accomplish in that route? Maybe similar question to what I asked you to start off last week after the UNLV debacle.
I think it's the same thing, Bob. They got a lot of players in the game. They got a lot of key players out of the game early, and hopefully the biggest thing they gained from it was just continuing their momentum, their good rhythm, especially offensively. You know, one of the things that Urban Meyer was asked about in his Monday press conference is, does he feel the passing game has improved, and does he feel the pass defense has improved? And he said yes, but they're realistic, meaning they understand that they can say that
based on the teams they've played the last 3 weeks, knowing that they're going to have to continue to do so against better competition, possibly this weekend. So, you know, I think they, more than anything, gained confidence, got a road victory, and they really were kind of able very early to take Rutgers right out of that game and take away their pride and take away any thought that Rutgers crowd had of enjoying themselves Saturday night.
Well, that's just mean.
Isn't it, though?
That's just not nice. If crowd, just don't bother getting excited here. There's not much for you here today. But you're right about getting a lot of guys a lot of playing time. And is this the kind of thing, Paul, that you look back on if late in the season you see a key injury or two at a certain position? And Urban Meyer, you know, is going to be asked, oh, my God, how are you going to survive without X? And the answer is going to be, well, I have Y ready to go because he got lots of time and experience in-game in those positions earlier this season, and that's how we set these things up.
There's no question, Bob, and a lot of it goes to what we talked about this last week, too. Usually at the beginning of the season, you see these kind of games in your non-conference schedule where you get some guys out there for the first time to get extended playing time on scrimmage downs. They didn't have that with Indiana and Oklahoma in the first 2 weeks, but they were able to get it with Army, with UNLV, and with Rutgers. So, you know, I think they now know what they've got at their backup linebacker positions. They now know what they've got at their backup quarterback position. They also know what they've got with getting more special teams players out there in scrimmage downs. So I think, you know, those are the things that you hope you don't have an injury, like you said, to come up late in the year. But if you do, you've got a Malik Harrison or Pete Werner at linebacker, you know, much like what they've had with Tuff Browning. You know you can throw out there, and those are good things to have achieved at this point of the year.
No question about it. We're talking Buckeyes football with Paul Keels. Buckeyes taking on a 3-1 Maryland team coming up this Saturday, coming off of, well, a very important win for them because I think they were probably embarrassed a little bit. Were the Terps when they lost to UCF by 28 at home 2 weeks ago. They bounced back with a Big Ten win over Minnesota, 31-24. But, Paul, as you analyze Maryland, you got to go back to the start of the season when they went to Texas and put 51 on the Horns. This could be a pretty good challenge.
It could be, but the crazy thing with all of the things you just mentioned, Bob, they're now down to their third-string quarterback. They lost Tyrone Pigram in that opener at Texas to a season-ending injury, and then the game against Central Florida, they lost Kasim Hill, a highly regarded freshman quarterback, to a season-ending injury. So Max Bortenschlager took over in the middle of the UCF game.
That just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Well, there's been some practice with it, yes. But, you know, they had a whole week to get him ready for the Minnesota game last week, and the payoff to that seemed to be very obvious. He was very much under control. They were able to get Minnesota to turn the football over, and that was a big key in all of that. They've got one of the best receivers in the Big Ten and maybe in the country in DJ Moore, a very talented tailback in Ty Johnson. But Bortenschlager was able to do his part and keep them in good position there, so they're improved. You know, they, much like Rutgers first coming into the Big Ten, they were overwhelmed. They made some small steps last year to be able to get into a bowl game. They've taken some significant steps with the two key road wins that you mentioned. This is a challenge, but maybe not as much a challenge as it was in the last few years when Maryland's played Ohio State.
To Bortenschlager, is he a true freshman?
You know, I'm in the car. I don't have the turn. I believe he's a junior. Now,
I hear third string. I assume he's one of the young, sophomore. I found him. I'm sorry. That's my bad. I can look him up. You're driving. I don't want you to do that.
No problem. He started one game last year. I know that. But he's been a guy that they haven't really leaned on much.
Yeah. Well, I know nothing about him, so I just looked him up. He's a sophomore. So just to throw that in there. And then last week in that win, a road win, by the way, against a 3-0 Minnesota team. You know, it's not like it was just against a nobody. He was 18 for 28 for 154, not a lot of yards, but he did throw a couple of touchdowns. And to ease him into it by running the ball well, as you pointed out, and to force some turnovers, as you point out as well, what you have to do for an inexperienced kid like this. But he is a sophomore, and he's coming into a very, very difficult place to play at Ohio Stadium. How does Urban prepare for this this Maryland offense?
And he also ran for a touchdown last week, too. And, I think really what they've done is put a lot of emphasis on what they saw last week from an offensive standpoint with what they did with Minnesota. He's not a guy that is going to hurt him like Pigram did when he was in there or like Kasim Hill did with a running threat. But, you know, just the way Urban talked earlier today, they realized they've got to be mindful of what he did with the one rushing touchdown at a crucial time that he scored in the Minnesota game. But I think they also will put a lot of their focus on DJ Moore, who we talked about, Tavion Jacobs, another skilled receiver, and two really good tailbacks in Ty Johnson and Lorenzo Harrison, and also just the general athleticism that Maryland has. I think even when you look at them defensively, you can see some of that with who they trot out there on defense. Part of their problem has just been they've been at times had to deal with massive injuries, and the numbers have just gotten sideways for them. But, you know, I think that Ohio State certainly has seen and has come to learn that this is a Maryland football team that recruits from an area that's an important area for Ohio State to recruit, and that D.C., Baltimore, Maryland area, Virginia area, and they're very respectful of some of the people that they're going to be able to throw out there with the athletes on the field.
No question about it. Paul Keel's joining us from the Ohio State Radio Network. Before I ask you about the Maryland defense and see what JT Barrett and the boys are going to be facing, let me go ahead and qualify our ticket European vacationers. That's right. We got an opportunity for you right now, the last two chances right now, to choose one of six European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. Just be callers 5 or 6 right now, 5 and 6. To 866-240-1065, and you'll be qualified for the grand prize drawing, which will be given away on Monday. That's right. You can also register one time at 1065theticket.com from Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 1065 The Ticket. Paul, thanks for enduring that while we move forward. And
not a problem.
And talk about the Maryland defense. Again, this is a 3-1 team. They put up 51. I was quick to praise them for their 51 they put up at Austin against the Longhorns in their opener, but they gave up 41. What kind of a defense do you expect Maryland to bring into the Ohio Stadium, to the Horseshoe?
I think what you see, Bob, is a very athletic defense. Jermaine Carter, their middle linebacker, this is his third year starting. He's got a chance to be their leading tackler for the third year in a row. A converted quarterback, Jesse Annabonham, an outside linebacker who's very athletic. A couple of defensive tackles who are very disruptive, Savon Walker and a young man by the name of Kingsley Opara. In the secondary, they've been burned a little bit, but they've got some of those guys that seemingly have displayed some pretty good selective amnesia. They had a crucial interception late in the Minnesota game from J.C. Jackson that really kind of helped them seal the game. So they're a defense that's got some very, very good athleticism. When Ohio State has played them in the last few years, part of the problem they've had is that defense has had to be out there awfully long. I think their offensive success, especially running the football, has been a big key in helping their defense not have to be on the field as long as they have been in previous years.
Yeah, that is certainly a big key, especially when you're playing against a team that can throw as many different weapons. There's so much offensive depth, which, as you pointed out, in these last couple of blowout wins, they've been able to establish even more with more of the younger guys, the second and third guys, getting in and producing. Because, boy, if you let Ohio State get a roll on you and they just keep running fresh backs and fresh receivers and fresh, big playmaking kind of guys, it can be disheartening and then, of course, just physically draining for a team that doesn't have quite the depth on defense that Maryland would have.
And, you know, it's funny you bring that up, Bob, because last week against Rutgers in his postgame press conference, Chris Ash talked about how late in that game, because of injuries and injuries they had coming into the game, they were moving players from offense to defense Saturday night that had not practiced a single second on defense.
Wow.
So there's something that kind of shows you how a team can get in trouble exactly like you were talking about. But I think what we've seen with Maryland, they haven't had that happen. They've been able to, again, benefit because of their time of possession and the way they've been able to advance the football. But that's what Ohio State does. When they get on those kind of rolls, when you've got so many people that can do so many things as they showed in the Rutgers game, I think the game notes had one of the lines. They've got, I believe, 7 receivers now that are sneaking up, if not already, in double figures catches. So, it's not just been J.T. Barrett setting record after record. It's been the way they've been able to spread the ball around, and that's helped make them dangerous.
I'm glad you brought that up, but let's go ahead and give a little credit to J.T. because, again, when he had a couple of struggles earlier on, especially in the Oklahoma loss, we're asking the tough questions about J.T., so let's shine a spotlight on the records. I mean, he just continues to essentially rewrite the record books. That can be misleading a little bit, obviously, because he's a fifth-year player, and not a lot of players do that and stay that long. So you have an advantage of playing more games and more seasons and so on and so forth, but that shouldn't diminish what this young man has been able to accomplish as the signal caller for this team.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Bob, because remember he was injured in the Michigan game in 14. in 15 for a good part of the year was sharing the quarterback reps.
Yep.
You don't generally have a guy that's around for 5 years like that. And the fact that he just surpassed Arch Sleaster for all-time passing yards in Ohio State history, I believe that's been 36 years that Arch's record was there, and one that a lot of people thought probably would never be reached. But here's a guy that I just still remember a few weeks before when he set the record for Big Ten touchdowns responsible for. The first thing JT's talking about is his teammates past and present, his coaches past and present, and, you know, he's just a team-first guy. And as impressive as he's been on the field, he's been that impressive of a young man, and that's probably what has endeared him to so many and will have people still thinking of him so highly for a guy that, you know, is going to leave Ohio State never having won a Heisman Trophy, a guy that was part of but didn't play in a national championship game. But he's going to be a guy that's going to be thought of so highly, not just because of his talents, but because of his personality and his team demeanor.
And we should also talk about, as long as he's been here, it's been as a winner. In addition to passing Schleister in the yardage, he is also now the fourth Buckeye starter or quarterback to start 30 wins, 30-game winner in school history, joining Schleister, Cornelius Green, and Bobby Horning, which some people may have forgotten about. He was a tremendously successful quarterback here, so that speaks a lot to JT Barrett. Let me go to one other guy real quick, because I've asked you each in the last couple of weeks about the health of Mike Weber, as J.K. Dobbins has kind of taken over as the lead back, if you will. Weber was healthy, and Weber got himself into the end zone three times against Rutgers. That's got to be something that the Maryland defensive coordinator has to worry about. Now we don't know what we're getting. The thunder, you know, inside from a Weber, or more of the outside lightning from a Dobbins.
Well, and for the first time, apparently, since July, Mike Weber was pain-free. So that was a good thing for him to be able to get out there, stretch some time out. They were able to rest Dobbins and not play him a ton. And then also another guy you've asked about in the past, Bob, was DeMario McCall.
Yes.
He got out there and cut loose on a long run, cut loose on a long touchdown catch, and by all accounts, he's still not 100%. So, you know, I think with those three options and the different ways they use them, that's a good sign for Ohio State's offense moving forward.
No question about it. I was really glad to hear that about McCall, too, because he's a guy who I think we talked about during the training camp portion of the calendar, that he was going to be, you know, perhaps that H-back type player who's going to just get the ball into so many different positions in space and can do great things with it. So glad to see him getting healthy and then getting the opportunity, even if it's in blowout situations right now, just to show what he's got. He's going to be a contributor. Paul Keels, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. He'll have the call for you when the Buckeyes take on Maryland this Saturday. And, Paul, thanks so much for the time this afternoon.
Always a pleasure, Bob. Take care.
Thank you, sir. You got it. Great stuff, as always, from the great Paul Keels. Yeah, JT Barrett becomes the Ohio State all-time passing yardage leader, as he just pointed out, and also now has become the fourth 30-game winner in school history. That's an amazing thing. I guarantee you he never anticipated that when he came to Ohio State as a freshman, that he'd be a fifth-year player. Of course, there were some bumps and some trials and travails along the way, including injuries and so on, but to lead 30 Buckeye victories, one of only four in the incredibly storied history of Ohio State football, that's saying something huge. All right, this is huge, too. Congratulations to Pat Lauber of Waterville and to Nathaniel Barkemer of Lions. They were the two qualifiers, the last two live on-air qualifiers for the European vacation that we are giving away on Monday as a part of a grand prize. You have to qualify to be in the running for that grand prize drawing on Monday. The only way for you to do it now is to do it online at 1065theticket.com. We, just FYI, a little programming note for you. We just did two of those qualifiers today instead of tomorrow because we are preempted tomorrow for playoff baseball. That's right. We have got the Red Sox and the Astros. Game two of their series starts at 1:30. We'll carry that for you live right here on the ticket. Then Indians and Yankees game two at around 5 o'clock or you know, shortly after the end of the first game. So we've got all of that covered on tomorrow's program, and that's followed by high school football with Central Catholic and Fremont Ross. And the pregame show starting at 6:30 tomorrow with kickoff at about 7 o'clock with Bill Clark, who is going to be by in just a few minutes to talk about the high school football weekend to come with Jim Cushlin and more. So all of that still to come. And by the way, before we go to the bottom of the hour Sports Center, I want to remind you the cold weather, you might not feel it now because it's a very, very nice temperature in this fall season. But the cold weather is a coming, and how do you avoid it? Or how do you get ready for it? To me, you avoid it Not having to get out there and scrape the ice and snow off your windows while you wait for your car to warm up. You want to get yourself a remote car starter from Car Stereo One. Get that engine started long before you leave the house or your work. Get the window defroster going. Warm it up inside so you're nice and toasty when it's time to hit the road. Steve and the guys and the staff at Car Stereo One will get you set up with a remote car starter that uses your own smartphone to start your car for just $195 installed. That's right. It's amazing. Now, if you want, you can wait and pay $300 for the remote car starter if you want to do it in the middle of winter, or you can save the money right now. That's right. As it gets colder, the price goes up because you want it more then, don't you? Get it done now and save the money. Get your remote car starter operated by your own smartphone for just $195 installed at Car Stereo 1 on Central, just a block east of Secor. Need directions? Go to carstereo1.com. Turtle. All right, Kush, so good stuff from Paul Keels. Great stuff, in fact, on college football. We're going to move to high school football coming up right after the bottom of the hour, local sports center. Our good friend, Mr. Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio, will be by to preview Central and Fremont and all of the other top games. Since, again, tomorrow we will have baseball all afternoon for you, leading right up to that Central-Fremont game right here on the ticket. So we'll get that local sports center now. High school football still to come right here on ESPN 106.5.
Kick it!
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back we are here on this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kuslin in for Bob here the rest of the way. We're going to be talking some high school football here in just a moment. That's because, of course, if you didn't hear Bob's announcement a few minutes ago, a little bit of a programming change. We're going to give you all sorts of baseball playoff games tomorrow from about the start of the Red Sox-Astros coverage. That's at about 1:30 tomorrow afternoon. That's going to lead all the way until Bill Clark of the crew takes over at 6:30. Central Catholic Fremont Ross carries through all that and the high school scoreboard show. Then back to baseball playoffs because the Dodgers are a real late night game. So we're giving you all sorts of game action tomorrow. And I mentioned some of that is Bill Clark in high school football, Central Catholic at Fremont Ross, week 7. Can you believe it's already week 7? So Bill, being the kind gentleman that he is, was able to swing around his schedule as well. He joins us today, right now, instead of on Friday, to talk all the high school matchups as we head into week 7. Good afternoon, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Good, Kush. How are you?
Hey, can't complain. Can't complain. Love talking football with you. Love talking some high school football. A lot of fascinating games coming up this week all over the various conferences. And I'm going to try to sprinkle in, if I'm getting these right, some of the playoff computer rankings. Because, of course, now that we're entering week 7, that's really going to start being a factor for some teams, whether home field or getting in at all. So let's start with your matchup tomorrow night. Central Catholic at Fremont Ross. The Irish suffered their first defeat in that great game last Friday at the hands of Whitmer. They're also now dropped to third in the D3 poll. Fremont Ross, by the way, not too shabby themselves. They're 4-2. They're 6 right now in D2. So both teams in the playoffs right now, and Central's on the road for this one. This feels like, I don't want to say a trap game necessarily, but Fremont Ross not to be taken lightly.
Oh, absolutely, Jim. I agree. I think Fremont Ross is really the surprise team in the track so far this year. I mean, the coaches, the preseason prognostications came out, and they picked Fremont Ross 6. And, boy, they gave Finley all they could handle a couple of weeks ago, went to triple overtime, ended up losing by a field goal. They've got the best passer in the league in Hayden Lehman, and they got one of the best receivers in Roger Burling. So they've got a very potent offensive attack, and they love to play at home. They're a very good team when they can pull out the gear and play at home and not have to travel anywhere. So I wouldn't consider this a trap game. I would just consider this a true test for the Irish, because for the first time since 2012, they're coming off a league loss. Now, granted, the loss in 2012 was the very last game of the season before they started their four-year run of undefeated football. But last week, they dropped that game to Whitmer. Whitmer played very well, Central with a couple of turnovers and couple of fourth and ones they couldn't convert. And in close games, you got to watch the turnovers, and you got to be able to make the big plays when you can. And to Whitmer's credit, when they got those two turnovers, they were able to capitalize both times on those for 14 points, and it ended up being a 7-point game at 21-14. But this week, obviously, I agree with you. I don't think this is a game Central can take lightly, and I can tell you that they will not take it lightly. Fremont Ross is the real deal, and like I said before, I really think they're kind of the surprise team in the track so far this year.
Not to mention the fact that for the Irish, Bill, I got to feel this is going to be one of those games, as you were kind of alluding to, that's really going to test them in more ways than just on the field. Because as you mentioned, first time in quite a while that they have a track loss that they got to rebound from. This is the kind of thing, regardless who the personnel on the squad is, this is the kind of thing that they haven't had to deal with much, as you pointed out, in these last couple of seasons. How important is that then for the Irish to make sure they get off to a decent start, you know, not turn the ball over, make you know, kind of mistakes that cost teams football games, because they're in a position that the Irish just usually aren't in.
Yeah, I think that's very true, and I think talking to the coaching staff this week down at Central Catholic, head coach Greg Dempsey and his staff realized that, and they have to, and they talked to their kids and said, okay, it's going to be tough to win the track, because there's really, I don't think anybody in this league right now, depending on who Whitmer has the rest of the way, that's going to beat the Panthers. So they pretty much, I think, will have the track championship locked up for the first time in 5 years. The Irish had four times, won it in a row. But really, there's nobody, unless they just come out with a bad game, left on Whitmer's schedule, that's going to beat them. So basically, the Irish are playing for the playoffs right now. And when you talked about the fact that they dropped in the computer rankings, that's the one thing about Central Catholic being in the track. They play a lot of D2 teams. Central is D3. And when you play D2 teams and you can beat them, you get a bevy of computer points. Plus, you also get the points that they got against the teams that they play. So it's a pretty sure bet that if Central does not lose the rest of the way, and obviously we still got four games to play, they'll get a home game in the playoff, and they could be two or three in the rankings. As long as you're in the top four, you get a home playoff game. And I was talking to Associate Athletic Director Mike Padgett today, trying to get some information on the game on Friday, and he pointed out that Central has never played in the 16 years that they've had the playoffs set up the way they have now with the computer points. Mm-hmm. Central's never had a first-round game on the road. They played a couple of games before the Gallagher was built, like at Clay.
Right.
That was their home game, but that they were the host team. So they've never had to go on the road in the first round of the playoffs. And that's obviously very big when you're playing a team that has to travel from, you know, close to Cleveland or maybe Sandusky,
sure,
or whatever. So four more games, and if they can pull those off, they should get another home game. But, yeah, tomorrow night's game with Fremont Ross is huge because for the first time, as you mentioned, you know, in 5 years, the Irish are coming off a league loss. So it'll be a little different feeling for them when they step on the field Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, win out, they'll at least hold a home field game, because right now that loss to Whitmer dropped them to third. So they're still on the good side, are the Irish, in terms of at least hosting a playoff game. That's obviously the goal, because as you point out correctly, unless Whitmer slips up, there's not really a track championship to play for. Let's go to those Whitmer Panthers, who remain undefeated. The win over the Irish last week puts them up to the top spot in their region in Division One. They're at home tomorrow night against a 3-3 Clay team that started out pretty well. It looked like, hey, finally Clay's turning the corner. Now they're 3-3 and going up against the tough league competition. Obviously, I personally see Whitmer ending up winning this game, but for Clay, any thoughts of playoffs or anything like that, they got to start turning it back around, don't they?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. The fact that they're playing Clay, they get Clay at home. From that standpoint, they have an opportunity to put the pedal to the metal. John Gellius has Clay playing very well. They're young. They've bought into his system, but it becomes a matter of talent. And Clay, no disrespect intended, just does not have the talent to compete with Whitmer. And I think Whitmer won't have any trouble this week. I think, you know, you might even call this a slight trap game, because after next week, they get Fremont Ross.
Yeah.
As we just pointed out, Fremont Ross is a pretty good team this year. So, but I don't see the Whitmer Panthers stubbing their toe this week against Clay. I think they'll continue to be undefeated in the league.
We're talking with Bill Clark, voice of high school sports, here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket tomorrow night, 6:30, the coverage time for Central Catholic at Fremont Ross. That's the game we'll have for you. One more game in the track before we move on to some other leagues around the area, Bill. St. John's at home, 3-3. They're in that final spot, 12th, as they only go to 12, in the computer rankings for D2. Meanwhile, they get a Findlay club, 4-2 overall. They're 5th in Division 1, so there's those Division 1 points. Is it must-win for St. John's the rest of the way?
I think it is. I think if they lose any more games, it's going to be tough to get into that top eight. But a win tomorrow night against Findlay at home will be huge. As you pointed out, Finley will give them Division I points versus Division II points. That helps a lot. So I think Larry McDaniel's crew is going to be fired up. But, yeah, I think it is almost a must-win if they want to make it in the playoffs.
Let's go to the Northern Lakes League now. Northview at home, still undefeated, though that undefeated mark is only good enough for fifth, so not even a home game at this point in their region in Division II. They host a 3-3 Bowling Green team who's eighth final playoff spot in Division III, so a lot riding on this game for both squads.
Yeah, I think obviously Northview again picked down in the second half, or the second half of the Northern Lakes League at sixth in the preseason prognostications, but they have surprised everybody. And again, their quarterback, Mr. Leach, is having himself a great year. And these kids that are playing right now as seniors for Northview, it's the first four-year class for Doug Downing. So he's been there 4 years, and these kids have been with him for those 4 years. They bought into his system. They love playing for him, and obviously winning cures a lot of ills. But, a win at home on Friday night over Bowling Green will do a lot for their psyche and do an awful lot for their computer points and their move up in the computer standings.
I want to go to the City League for one game, partly to give them some love and partly because the one team at the top of the City League right now is in action in a game today. Start at 3-3, hosting 1-5 Scott. Obviously, there's not going to be a lot of playoff things with the strength of City League. That's something we've talked about over the years, you and I end up with Bob as well. But Start could still at least try to get themselves a City League championship. They got an interesting one against Scott tonight.
Yeah, I think that's what they got to play for. They've got to play for the city title. There's no doubt about that. What happens, Scott is not a very good team. They won their first game, I think, in a very long time, a week or so ago. They stopped a long losing streak. But, that's what Start needs to play for. Again, as you mentioned, Jim, the problem with Start, they're in Division I, but they just don't play the right number of teams, the right kind of teams to get a lot of computer points. And when they have a chance to do that, they don't win that game. So it's a two-pronged problem for Start. They don't have a really tough schedule. The City League, when you play your City League opponents, you're not going to get a lot of points that way. And when they do play a team that has an opportunity to get them some points if they can win, they don't come up on the right side of the end of the game. So, yeah, Start taking a shot at the City League is what they're going to play for, and they got a great shot of doing it.
Next, we go to the Northern Buckeye, and I love this fascinating matchup. 6-0 Eastwood, they're second in Division 5 at Otsego, who's having a turnaround year themselves, 5-1. They're fourth in D5. So this is a battle for not just NBC supremacy, but playoff home field positioning, as both teams are hosting games as of right now.
Yeah, Eastwood's playing very well under Craig Rutherford. It's his first year, but it's not really a change at the top because his dad was the coach since Christ left Chicago. So it's not really a change in philosophy, and the kids continue to play very well. But Otsego under Matt Giroir is doing a really nice job, too. They've got some big horses over there that can get you some points, can get you some yards. It'll be interesting to see because I think both defenses play very well, but I think both offenses, as they both have proven this year by the kinds of numbers they put up, this could be a great shootout. So it could come down to which defense plays a little bit better to see who wins that game.
Talking with Bill Clark, voice of high school sports here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, Central Catholic at Fremont Ross tomorrow night at 6:30. Bill, kind enough to join us on a Thursday since we're going to give you a baseball playoff, high school football, baseball playoff coverage. Basically, for 12, 13 straight hours tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to that. Let's go to the NWOAL, another very fascinating matchup between a couple of powers. I got two games for you. Essentially, the top four teams in the NWOAL are facing off this week. You got Liberty Center at Archibald. That's a pair of 5-1 teams. Liberty Center fifth, Archibald third in D5. The other is Swanton, ninth at D5, 4-2. They're at 5-1. Wauseon fifth in Division 4, so there's some of those points things. Break down a couple of these matchups, as these are essentially for supremacy in the NWOAL.
Yeah, that's the kind of league that the NWOAL is. I mean, it's kind of like the track in that you really don't get a night off. Every Friday night, you've got to come to play. And the interesting thing is, if you look at the division that most of these teams are in, I believe out of the top 10, there are three, see if I got this right, there's five from the NWOAL and three from the NBC. So you've got the NWOAL with a lot of playoff possibilities for a lot of their teams. So not only are they trying to win a league championship, but they're trying to move up in the computer standings, too, to get a shot at playing some extra football when November rolls around. But this is, as you said, two intriguing matchups. The fact that Swann has to travel to Wauseon, I'm going to go back to my philosophy that if you're at home, it might be worth a few points. And on the other side, with Liberty Center, they are at Archbold. Liberty Center, I tell you, you got to play at Liberty Center. It's tough, but Archbold's no fun to play there either. So I'm going to give the Blue Streaks just a slight advantage in that one.
A couple more games for you, and thanks so much, as always, for the time. Bill Clark, our voice of high school sports here on the ticket. In the TAC, Ottawa Hills, they are 4-2, but on the outside looking in right now, 10th in Division 6. They're at a tough 5-1 Hilltop, kind of like St. John's earlier. Is it a win out or no playoffs for Ottawa Hills?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the case, and I think Greg Neuendorf has told his kids that. Greg's in his fourth year over at Ottawa Hills. These kids play very, very hard. A lot of kids go both ways. The numbers are not huge, but they've got exciting and enthusiastic numbers. These kids really go in, 100% at every single game, and I think this might be a surprise. I think that they're going into Hilltop. Hilltop is 5-1, but I'm going to take the upset. I'm going to take Ottawa Hills on the road. And we're going to have a chance to talk about it on Tuesday night because Greg Neuendorf is going to be on the football forum on Tuesday night, so he'll be able to break it down for us next Tuesday.
Nice, nice. One final matchup for you, Bill. I want to go across the state line into Michigan. The Bedford Kicking Mules having a very good season. They are 5-1. Their only loss is to the powerhouse of their conference, Saline. They're on the road at a team I'm very familiar with, the Monroe Trojans, because, of course, I get to call the games for the Monroe Trojans for our Cumulus Toledo sister station, 98.3 Nash Icon, up there in Monroe. Bedford's taken the last two, including 2 years ago, in a similar situation on a homecoming for the Trojans. I've been very impressed with the Kicking Mule season. Do you think they'll be able to keep it going against the Trojan squad that, for what it's worth, they have a couple of good running backs? One's a sophomore, for goodness sake, that they're going to have to contend with.
Well, I think it's going to be very important for Bedford to keep winning. They've only got three more games because the schedule is a little bit different the way they do things in Michigan as far as the playoffs go. So I don't think Bedford can afford to stub their toe. And obviously, you know a lot more about the Monroe team. You've got an opportunity to see them every week. You think they've got the charges to get by Bedford?
I kind of do. I mean, I've been so impressed with Jared Banks. The kid's only a sophomore, and he's been running over people this year. But I felt confident 2 years ago. It was the same situation at Monroe. Bedford was not as good as they are right now, and Bedford went in and ended up winning that football game and then had a much better year last year. I do kind of like, I have to say, I kind of like Bedford a little bit in this one, but I would not be surprised essentially by either result. Bill, thanks so much as always for the time. Have a good call out there tomorrow. Central Catholic at Fremont Ross. Bill Clark will have the call for you starting at 6:30 right here on the ticket. Bill, thanks so much for the time today.
My pleasure, Coach. Talk to you next week.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out after our quick top of the hour timeout. Stick around. Yours truly, in for Mike Miller. He's on hockey assignment for Drive Time. We're going to talk a lot about the baseball playoffs coming up, including the Indians and the Yankees later tonight. So stick around for that.